It's MRCTV's public service announcement with Brittany Hughes and Eric Shiner.
And welcome to the MRCTV podcast. I'm Eric Shiner.
I'm Brittany Hughes. Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Happy Wednesday. And of course, a lot of people had their eyes riveted to the TV last night at 9 o'clock for President Trump's address about the need for a border wall and the border crisis, followed by the Crypt Keeper and Mr. Crypt Keeper, it seems.
Crypt Keeper and his wife.
Yeah, giving their address. And joining us to talk about this and the media coverage is the maestro of Newsbusters. He has a good track on the liberal media bias and has an interesting take on some of their coverage and fact-checking last night. Tim Graham is with us. Tim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And first, I guess we got to talk a bit about the actual address itself. We were talking about this before the show. I actually thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was great.
It was pretty good. He does much, President Trump does much better off a prompter. He didn't say things like bigly and make mistakes when he speaks off the cuff, which is what he prefers to do, and a lot of people like him doing it, but I liked him sounding presidential on this issue.
I completely agree. And look, I do think there's a balance to be struck here. I understand why a lot of people like his off-the-cuff remarks. They like the fact that he gives it straight. He doesn't necessarily sound like a politician. People gravitate towards that, and I understand that. At the same time, he has left himself open to gaffes and a lot of mistakes, and sometimes he says things that you go back and you're like, well, that wasn't factually accurate. And I think when he stays on prompter, he has, you know, it's much easier for him to get his message across and to do so without all of the glaring mistakes or things that people are going to single out and use as sound bites. You know, so I thought it was great. I thought it was short and succinct. I thought that it was full of, you know, not just one argument for a border wall, but a very well-rounded argument for a border wall that came from several different angles. I thought it was fantastic, to be honest with you. I really did.
All right, Tim's sitting here nodding. Tim, give us your take on this.
Well, I thought the best line in it that I thought that really should have been the news clip was when he, and I'm sure it wasn't, was where he said that...
Some have suggested a barrier is immoral. Then why do wealthy politicians build walls, fences, and gates around their homes? They don't build walls because they hate the people on the outside, but because they love the people on the inside.
And that's the kind of line that seems un-Trumpy. And usually, if you were a media consultant, you'd say that's your 15 seconds.
Yeah, it was a softer, gentler Trump.
Well, and so I think there's a difference between the politically minded people who watched these two speeches and said, I've heard all this stuff before, and then whoever those people were who haven't been paying great amount of attention, who might watch this, they're the ones that really are the ones that if anybody's mind's going to be changed, it's because they haven't been watching a lot of this. Because the actual lyrics last night, for the most part, were the same from both the Democrats and the Republicans. And so if you've been watching all the news coverage, you're like, nothing changed here.
Yeah, nothing new. Nothing new was given. But it was a better presentation on behalf of the president. I would say it was actually a worse presentation on behalf of Senator Schumer and House Speaker Pelosi. That looked awkward.
Leader Schumer.
Thank you, Speaker Pelosi.
It started bad. That was the thing, is it started bad the minute they panned to the two of them. I mean, I said that honestly, and I know that it's not and I get that, but right. But Chuck Schumer looked like the Crypt Keeper and Nancy Pelosi looked like his wife. That's the way that it came across. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. People were comparing it to the American Gothic painting, you know, of the really dour-faced farmer and his wife standing there. That's what it looked like. But even beyond that, because again, you know, that's low-hanging fruit and we can mock that and it's whatever.
Right, yeah.
Even beyond that, though, I really did. I was actually interested in what their rebuttal to his factual arguments were going to be. He pointed out things like the criminal alien element and how that impacts Americans and other immigrants. He pointed out how much money it costs to have a broken immigration system with an open border. He pointed out the drug problem. He pointed out several different key pieces of information for why a border wall is important and why getting this illegal immigration crisis under control is important. I listened very carefully. I actually went back and listened to it again this morning. I did not hear either one of them, either Senator Schumer or House Speaker Pelosi, say one comment in rebuttal to his factual statements. They couldn't. all they could say were buzzwords about, you know, the shutdown and about how he was stonewalling and about, you know, how he's playing these political games. They didn't address a single one of his points. And that was a glaring difference.
And the wall's not the answer, but they
but then what is?
Offer. Yeah. Well, we'll get into the media's take on this in a little bit. You know, you can quibble and argue about the numbers that Trump used. You know, how many are crossing the border? How many are have criminal records? And, you know, but at least we know where he got those numbers from. You can argue about that. I didn't hear numbers, factual numbers, that you could even quibble with from Schumer and Pelosi.
They didn't even try.
And, you know, and really, I would think the media at this point has to go, well, okay, Trump said, here's the numbers. X amount of people are crossing the border illegally. This is X amount is the cost. X amount have criminal records. And this is why it's a crisis. If they're going to say it's not a crisis, the question then is, well, Nancy, Chuck, how many Americans have to be raped, robbed, and murdered at the hands of illegal aliens before it's a crisis? How many people have to cross the border? What's the number? What is it? If the wall's not the answer, what is the answer and what's the number where it becomes an acceptable idea to you? At what point, why is it not a crisis? How do the numbers show it's not a crisis? Give me something. And I didn't see that. And of course... The media, CNN in particular, had a fact check ticker going on. And Tim, you loved this fact check ticker.
Yeah. Well, again, before I start hitting on the fact checkers, let me make the point that to address what you were saying. And that is, we've been studying this for decades, the way the media covers immigration. And especially, again, yes, back in 2006, when all these people were in favor of a border fence. The news media never wants to focus on the cost of immigration to the health care system, the education system, mm-hmm. the welfare system, and especially the criminal justice system. These are all things. Their coverage of illegal immigration is all Juan Pablo wants to come out of the shadows. That's what they do. They cover sympathetically illegal immigrants. That's what they do. They approach this entire issue as a racial diversity issue, never as anything else. And so obviously in Trump's case, he's laid it down exactly that way. Now, yes, the problem last night was, of course, you come out this morning, there's no fact check on PolitiFact, Snopes, CNN, Washington Post. There's no fact check on what Pelosi or Schumer said. None. Because they're not interested in that. They are all interested in fact checking Trump. What got me this morning was the PolitiFact fact check, where this is where you're right, the very carefully screened, scripted address by Trump, which keeps him out of factual trouble, is the phrase last night was, Chuck Schumer voted for a physical barrier. And PolitiFact put out a graphic that said misleading because, well, that was a fence, not a cement wall. Well, what did Trump say? Trump said he supported a physical barrier. So there's nothing misleading in that sentence at all. What was misleading was putting out a box to share on the internet saying Trump was misleading. So this is where, again, the fact check Trump when he says stuff that is actually, you know, you can all make fun of Mexico is going to pay for it. Everybody understands. I think everybody understood in 2015 that that was not going to pan out, at least not in a direct way. But when you fact check him, don't fact check things that he said that actually are factual and try to say they're misleading. The other thing they were trying to say was about the opioids coming over the border. And they said, yes, most heroin comes through the Mexican border. So, again, true statement. Well, there the box was, you know, needs context. I mean, this is one of those things that what's wrong with fact-checking is that a lot of times you're fighting over context. Well, yes, it comes across the border, but it doesn't come across on people. It comes across inside train cars or something.
Which drive themselves, clearly.
Well, it's still coming across the border. They're saying a wall wouldn't stop it. Okay. But, you know, and so that to me is, again, you're having a discussion about context, and that's
and numbers, right? Yeah,
and that's where just don't call it a fact check. You should save your fact checks for things that are actually about hard, undisputed facts, and that's not what they do. They are saying we don't want to give Trump what he wants or what he has promised. Everybody understands that watched 2 minutes of news between now and 2015. This is his central promise of life. I'm going to build a wall. And so they're saying, I'm going to deny him the building the wall. I'm going to deny him a victory. And this is where you just say, yes, if you had a truly objective news media, they'd come into the shutdown and say, guys, can't we come together? Can't we find some common ground? And there's some of that, but mostly you came out of that speech last night and was all Trump lied, Trump's wrong, Trump won't give, Trump shut the government down. And you take their notion where they say Trump's holding America hostage. This is where, again, if the PolitiFacts were on the other side, they'd be like, no, actually, Trump hasn't taken any hostages yet.
Oh, there was a nice look to Senator Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. It did kind of look like a hostage video.
It did.
In a way.
I'm not sure that it was actually them. I kind of feel like maybe they were like there was some robots or something going on there. But I mean, look, first of all, with regard to the whole wall versus fence or whatever, I did remember back in that speech, President Trump, and he's kind of, if you notice, he started to sort of, you know, not shy away from the word wall. He still uses wall, but he kind of uses it sort of interchangeably with a fence because
or a barrier
because he has, you know, and he even said specifically in his speech last night that, look, we started with the concept of a concrete wall. We have now moved to a steel slat fence at Democrats' request. This is so. Really, what he's kind of pivoted to in terms of what this thing would actually look like is close to what Schumer would have voted for some years ago. So it is. It's even semantically, it's the exact same thing. But I think, and I hate to give him credit, so I'm going to choke on these words. I know that. But I actually thought that CNN's Brian Stelter made a good point on Twitter last night. But not necessarily for the reason that he was trying to make it. He actually tweeted that he was watching this speech at a very busy restaurant, and it just reminded him that speeches like this, most Americans are not necessarily at home glued to their television watching these things. They're going about their lives, and he made the point. He said they get these speeches in tiny sound bites from the media later on, if at all. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very interesting that he pointed it out, because that's exactly our criticism of CNN, of MSNBC, of the liberal media, because it's what sound bites they pick and choose, not necessarily the holistic, comprehensive. I mean, this was not a long speech. It would not take somebody a long time to sit down and listen to, but they cherry pick the things that they can take issue with or that they can try to spin. And I thought it was interesting. He probably didn't admit this for that particular reason, but I thought it was an interesting admission for him to make, because that's exactly what they did with the speech last night.
Well, my joke at Brian Stelter was the whole notion that he came into the speech or during the speech and tweeted something to the effect of Trump lies. Everything he says is a lie. You know, everything that he says is this is like this. We have this ongoing epic crisis of authoritarian Trump. I mean, the tweets read like that. They're overheated. Lie, 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 lie. We all have to get in there and fact check him. You understand where all these people are coming from. They're so unhappy he's president. They're so unhappy that anybody believes anything he says. And so, yeah, it is absolutely true that so many people aren't news junkies like we are. They don't see as much news as we do. And they catch CNN in the airport. Well, why do we think the CNN chyrons are so psychotic sounding? Because they're trying to get across to people where the sound is down at the bar, but they're sitting there like a political advertisement saying, Trump's coming unhinged again, you know, on the screen. And all that does, again, is it's just underlined to people that CNN's branding right now is constantly wetting its pants over how terrible Trump is.
I think you could have guessed CNN's commentary after the speech. They probably wrote it all beforehand. Trump lies. It's awful. I mean, I saw them go right to Jim Acosta immediately after. Oh, yo, he didn't like it. Really? No. Jim Acosta thought that Trump was lying. And
Acosta called it a witch's brew, and I immediately tweeted, imagine Pelosi's speech being called a witch's brew.
Well, this is interesting.
Sexist, sexism, now, misogyny, patriarchy.
If you
buzzwords.
Watch a regular network, and you know, not a cable news network, and NBC, ABC, CBS, I can't remember off the top of my head. I think it was ABC that I was watching last night. It was interesting. Trump does his speech. They go back to George Stephanopoulos and the others, and they're going on the round table dissecting it, and you know, John Carl's how bad it is, and all that. And then they go to the Schumer. Pelosi speech. That's over. Time to go back to regular programming.
Yep.
No dissection. None. Zero. Zip.
Well, and that to me represents, again, the way that they covered this. And that is, if you were watching cable news, I had CNN on with the witch's brew. And that's what they did, is they came out and it was all analyzing Trump. There was just this little bit of Chris Cuomo when they immediately came out of Pelosi and Schumer going, And then after about 2 minutes, it was back to Trump, 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 Trump.
It was really it was pretty stilted.
It's really amazing.
Stuff of nightmares, really.
The first 2 years of Trump, it was they just didn't focus on the Democrats at all. First 2 years of the Trump presidency, they weren't focused on what the Democrats were debating about internally, what they were saying, what they were doing. Who on earth is Tom Perez? You'd never know. You know, what crazy thing did Keith Ellison just say? Nobody cares.
Or do.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
So they didn't cover it. They just didn't cover the Democrats as an entity very much on national news or national TV. And now, yeah, so they hold a House of Congress now. You would expect the Democrats to get more scrutiny. And I just don't think that's happening.
Well, and one thing that I think is really interesting is, again, when you're talking about two sides of this immigration debate, because this is a big issue and it is a nuanced issue and it has a lot of different facets, right? Whether you're talking about visa overstays or our southern border or, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could come at this. So it is a giant pile of debating ideas, right? And what I find interesting is for all that they hold the Republicans' feet to the fire and Trump and they analyze every single word that comes out of his mouth, and I'm not saying that they should. You know, he's the president of the United States. Fact check him. That's fine. I agree with you that it needs to be objective, not subjective. But I have no problem, questioning their ideas or making them defend their ideas. But you have to do the same on the left. You have to do the same with the Democrats. I have not heard anybody in the liberal media, and even, to be honest, in some interviews over on Fox News, I kind of wish they would do this a little bit more, where when you have one of these guys on your program and they say things like, well, we don't want a wall, but we do want border security, pin them down and make them defend what that means. What specifically does that mean, and how do you plan to address it? Because one thing I do not hear coming from the left is, okay, you don't like what he's proposing. You'll never like it no matter what he proposes. What is your solution? Because everybody agrees we have a major problem. It has been in existence for a long time. No one has gotten to the bottom of it and figured out how to solve it. Nobody's even tried. What is your solution, not this? Right, and right. No one will ask them.
No, they presented a solution. It's to separate the funding bill for the government shutdown from the border security
bill. So kick the can down the road like it has been for the last 30 years.
Exactly,
okay.
What they want and kick the can
but
down the road and lose
solve
that battle as well. And that's
immigration.
Historically that's been done. Now saying that, okay, I thought Trump's speech was good. He made a good argument. It was presidential. I really would have liked to hear it a year ago when Republicans were in power.
Yeah, well, it's intriguing that this is the first time Trump's requested time on the networks. And I think, I'm going to guess that inside the White House, they would have said, they'll deny us. Don't do it. They're going to deny us. And Trump doesn't want to be denied like that. That would be embarrassing. I think that's wrong. I think it would look, it would look good for, it'd make the media look bad.
If CNN didn't cover it, they would look bad. If they didn't run a presidential address. And I thought it was hysterical that they were actually openly debating whether or not to give him coverage until Pelosi and Schumer said they were going to speak afterwards. And all of a sudden, well, okay, because we get to air Nancy and Chuck, I guess, you know, it's no longer a debate. We'll do it because we get to do both.
Well, they gave Obama repeated national addresses outside the State of the Union. No Republican rebuttal. The Republicans didn't even expect one because, again, Republicans expect the media is going to be biased.
And yeah, no, you had to go to the web to see it.
They would try to say, well, Obama was denied the one time he tried to give an immigration speech. That's correct. Let's add some context. Here's the seven other times they gave him free time to address Congress, to address whatever.
Well, he did have a national address on immigration. He had a very, very long one when he decided he was going to launch the all of the different changes to the unaccompanied alien children and the Dreamers and DACA and all that stuff. I remember, and that was twice as long as Trump's, if not more.
You can't seriously argue that Obama didn't get a lot of access to the networks. And there's, again, obviously there are times where the White House needs to realize, well, they really want to run Ellen DeGeneres' game show, so you better be careful.
And they did. They ran it.
Yeah.
They did.
Well, there's a lot of Americans who are like, you know, I'd rather watch that. I'd rather watch some dumb schmuck fall through a hole than watch this show.
Well,
that's why they flip. There are a lot of Americans, and hopefully they don't vote, who are like, oh, politics, flip, flip, flip.
Did you find it interesting what I mentioned earlier, that originally they were openly debating denying him until we heard that Pelosi and Schumer were going to have the rebuttal? And then all of a sudden, that issue just died.
Yeah, one of the reasons liberal media bias happens is because they don't really care what conservatives think. But when liberals are upset about something, they're very concerned about it. So this reflected, this whole debate over whether we should give Trump airtime was the debate going on within the Democratic elites. Like, you shouldn't give him any airtime. He's a lying dictator Hitler. Don't give him any airtime. Don Lemon was saying, censor him, censor him. Don't give him any time. It's always amazing for the journalists to say that. You know?
Censor him.
But, you know, he deny him the time. He doesn't deserve it. And yeah, again, it was unprecedented that you added the Democrats on that. Now, when you go way back to when did it begin that the Democrats, that there was opposition time for anybody? And it happened under Nixon because the Democrats wanted opposition time under Nixon. And suddenly the Democratic media said, yeah, let's give the Democrats reaction time. I bet, let's say that Trump gets defeated in 2020, we'll go to 2022, and the Republicans will want a response. They'll be like, no, you don't get one. Because that's again, this is the way we understand a liberal Democratic media operates.
Yeah. Well, and when they go into it automatically, assuming, and this is something that it bothers me, even though that I know it's typical and we shouldn't be surprised by it, is this constant labeling of, even before he speaks, before they even know what's in his speech, they immediately start labeling whatever Trump is going to say as propaganda. It's going to be misleading and it's going to be propaganda.
Propaganda is a nice word. They use the word lie. That's the word I heard.
That he's going to lie. You know, so again, it's this assumption, it's this preconceived, and it's, you know, if you're a pundit, whatever, you're going to go into it with your opinion, with your bias. We've got them on the right and the left, right? We've got pundits that we look to for an analysis from a certain point of view. When you are supposedly an objective journalist and you're in the middle of a speech and you're sitting there, you know, tweeting out what you think about it or the fact that, you know, well, he's lying. Well, you haven't even bothered to look into what he just said. You know, you're sitting at your restaurant listening to it or wherever you happen to be. I think that that's really where it's obvious to the point of absurdity now that what we're dealing with isn't journalism. We're dealing with people that are going into it with preconceived notions. Nothing's going to change their mind. I almost wonder, though, if giving the Democrats airtime and, you know, wanting to do that and giving Trump airtime because there was going to be a rebuttal coming, if they almost weren't disappointed that Chuck and Nancy didn't do a little bit better.
Yeah,
because they came back
they
and they were like,
the
oh,
goods.
Well,
they
that, deliver the goods. There was that. And
well,
that was pretty much it.
Look, again, if you went back and said, and you could do this before, how many times does Nancy Pelosi do national television news interviews? It's not very common. How many national television news interviews does Charles Schumer do on, like, the Today Show? It's not very common. It was the same for Harry Reid. They almost never showed up.
And now we know why.
Well, that's exactly. That's possibly it, is that the Democrats in their own circle is like, yeah, that's not going to work.
No, it lacked the charisma of a wet paper bag. It really did.
All right, speaking of lacking charisma of a wet paper bag, before we go, got a clip to play. Hold on. Here it is.
Kellyanne, can you promise that the president will tell the truth tonight? Will he tell the truth?
Yes, Jim, can you promise that you will?
I will.
The whole
absolutely.
Truth and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I'm not the
Am
one
I
who has the
alternative
God to
facts you?
Problem like you do.
No, well, that, you know, Jim, I know that's
the truth.
Make sure that goes viral.
Okay.
This is why, by the
can
way, this is why I'm one of the only people around here who even gives you the time of day.
Can you guarantee
and
that the president's
speech
will
let me get back in your face, because you're such a smart ass most of the time, and I know you want this to go viral. A lot of these people don't like you.
And Kellyanne Conway responding to Jim Acosta. That was beautiful yesterday. We're almost out of time, but we got to mention this.
I couldn't stop watching it. I saw it on Twitter and I could not stop. It was so beautiful. I mean, Jim Acosta, really, life goals should be to find someone who loves you like Jim Acosta loves Jim Acosta. He's the most arrogant, self-absorbed, narcissistic, just loves the sound of his own voice. And I don't normally pull the feminist line. I really don't. I don't care. You're man, woman. It doesn't matter to me. But honestly, watching a woman smack him down so bad and so embarrassingly was hilarious to me. He had nothing. He had absolutely nothing. It was beautiful. It was brilliant. I loved every minute of it.
Not only do I tolerate you, but nobody here really likes you either.
Nobody loves you. Everybody hates you. Please shut up. You smart ass. It was great. It was wonderful.
The man is a cartoon. Everything he does on camera is a cartoon. And I think even the other people in the White House press corps go, Oh, geez, here he goes.
Well, you notice how when he got blacklisted for about 2 seconds from the White House, really nobody else in the White House press corps was, like, standing up for him. Like, networks would, but nobody else who actually has to be in the room with him really said a whole lot. Because I think everybody was kind of like, oh, thank God, Jim's got to shut up now, and we might actually get a word in edgewise.
Well, it's also silly because it was all like, well, CNN now is down to 9 White House correspondents.
Oh,
what are we going to do?
Hey, what are we going to do? We're out of time. Thanks for joining us on the MRC TV podcast. Until next week, I'm Eric Shiner.
I'm Brittany Hughes. We'll see y'all next time.